Welcome back to the program. Just as the politics of our times makes it difficult for science to find its way, so too was that the case in the Victorian era. This is our focus today as we examine the adventures of a young man who would emerge from the jungles of Africa with evidence of great mysteries that would be co-opted by one of the greatest scientific debates of the time, the arguments about evolution. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Monty Real. He's a former reporter for the Washington Post, the author of the critically acclaimed The Last Tribe, and it is my pleasure to welcome Monty Real here to talk about Between Man and Beast, an unlikely explorer, the evolution debates, and an African adventure that took the Victorian world by storm. Monty Real, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
Tell us a little bit how you came upon this story, first of all. This is a story that while it has larger significance, really has been hidden away for so long.
Yeah, the character at the center of the book, Paul Duchaillou, has pretty much dropped into the cracks of history. But I kind of came upon his story by accident. I was reading a few years ago, several years ago now, I was reading a lot of 19th century travel fiction, travel nonfiction, just because I found it so interesting. And in one of those books, I came across a reference to this young explorer, Paul Duchaillou. And it referenced the sensation that he sparked by essentially introducing the world to the gorilla, by bringing specimens out of Africa and taking them to the U.S., and to London. And I hadn't heard his name before. And I started looking into his story, and it was just a phenomenal sort of adventure story that his life kind of took the shape of. And the more I tried to find out about him, the more contradictions that seemed to pop up just in the most basic details of his life. People would list his birthplace, for example. Some would have it as Paris. Some would have it as Gabon in Africa. Others, New Orleans. So just the most basic facts of his life didn't seem to be really nailed down. But I kind of, you know, then got curious about him and started kind of piecing his life and adventures together. And what it shaped into was kind of a window onto this moment in history. The middle 19th century, when people were just starting to really debate the idea that men and apes might share some sort of kinship. There's this young man who brings a new ape into the world, and scientists are saying that this is man's nearest relative in the animal kingdom. And not only that, it's just an incredibly, to the people of that day, frightening animal. It seems absolutely menacing. You can imagine the fears and the passions that this would stir up. And when I started to look into what really happened, the story of Duchaillou seemed an opportunity to kind of throw a new angle of light on that era that's so rich and was so important in kind of shaping how we view our relationship to the natural world.
One of the interesting aspects was Duchaillou was not an established explorer at all. He really was under-equipped, under-prepared for the journey that he would take.
Yeah, he was a young guy. His interest in this, in trying to, you know, launch an expedition really started when he was 17. That's where you can trace this back to. That's when he arrived in Gabon. His father was a French trader, had a trading station on the coast, and Duchaillou went there to join him. But shortly after he arrived, he met an American missionary named John Layton Wilson. Wilson was the first missionary in Gabon. And just by chance, a short time before Duchaillou met him, Wilson collected the first gorilla skull known to science. So Duchaillou became fascinated with this animal that at that time was really cloaked in a lot of mythology and folklore. People didn't know anything about it. Several years later, he launches this expedition to try to be the first person to really encounter these animals in the wild and describe them. And when he went in to Africa on this expedition, he essentially had no money, no backing. It was a true kind of seat of the pants expedition. If you compare his journey, for example, to others of that day. To take an example, Henry Morton Stanley, when he went searching for the famous missionary explorer David Livingstone. Stanley estimated that his gear alone weighed about 11,000 pounds. That's what he took into Africa on his expedition, and he had hundreds of people accompanying him to carry that and guide him. All of Du Chaillu's equipment when he went in fit in a single dugout canoe. So he was really kind of going in just on his own, and he would make friends, make contacts and friends with the tribes that he would meet the further he went in. So he ended up spending about 3 years during the first expeditionary period, and he emerged in 1859 then with more than 20 gorilla specimens, and those are the ones that he brought to the U.S. and to England, and that sparked such a sensation.
When he went in, what did he expect to find? What was his object?
Well, he wanted to find gorillas, and he had spoken to the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia about the possibility of them backing him or sponsoring him. And they were interested. They expressed interest. And he had sort of a verbal agreement that he would display whatever specimens he brought back there at the Academy. That relationship later kind of fell through, but he was hoping to really explore this area that no one had really ventured into before. He didn't really know what he would find, but he had heard all of these almost mythological stories about the gorilla, and this was the obvious sort of prize for going into this area. But the stories he heard painted just an incredible kind of monster. The only people who had really seen gorillas and told stories about gorillas were native hunters. And the legends that they told were spectacular. They said that the gorilla was this incredibly ferocious, savage beast that would attack invariably if it saw humans. Today we know that's not true. Gorillas are relatively peaceful animals and don't go out of their way to attack people. But at that time, Du Chaillu had no way of knowing that. He had heard these stories that the gorilla was this fearsome beast with almost supernatural strength. They told stories that it would abduct women and take the women out into the forest, and you know they would either disappear or unspeakable things would happen to them. So when Du Chaillu went in, he kind of went in with all these things floating around in his head about encountering a monster.
When he would come out, in addition to the gorilla specimens, he would also come out with these amazing stories of his own about swamps and serpents and even cannibals that he claims to have encountered.
Yeah, one of the things about Du Chaillu is he was sort of a natural-born storyteller. And you can imagine he's with people who are kind of feeding his imagination the whole time with these incredible stories of gorillas. So when he confronts them, it has even more drama than such a confrontation would have today with someone who's familiar with the gorilla. This was a wholly unknown species. So he's seeing this. He has no idea what to expect. And when he starts to tell people these stories, he kind of senses that this is a very, very good story. And he kind of milks it for all he's worth. He goes on lectures. And Du Chaillu is naturally exuberant. He uses body language to communicate, so he almost goes into pantomime, imitating gorillas. He's a very entertaining speaker, and this helps kind of launch his fame. And he kind of gets into this a little too much and peppers his stories with some exaggerations and becomes kind of almost a showman, in a sense.
How does that impact on his credibility with respect to what he really discovered there?
Well, it clouded it quite a bit. When he got to London, that's where kind of the quote-unquote gorilla fever really set in. He became an instant celebrity. He would go on these lectures with stuffed gorillas right beside him. And it was quite a show. And, you know, the public ate it up. But there were scientists. This was a period of great, not only advance in science, but also jealousy. It was really a lot of backbiting going on in the Victorian scientific world. And Du Chaillu was seen as an outsider coming into this sort of small, cloistered group of scientists, and he most certainly was. He had no scientific training. And whenever he kind of displayed his artifacts and displayed the information that he had collected, he did it in a way that was not, to some, scientifically acceptable. So there were all sorts of attacks on the information that he brought back. And some of those attacks were justified because Du Chaillu did make some mistakes. He, for example, listed some species that he had found there, in addition to the gorilla, as new and undiscovered, when in fact science had discovered some of those species before. He didn't know that. His maps were flawed because he didn't really have any scientific backing when he went in there. But some of the attacks also were a lot nastier and a lot more personal, and they had to do with Du Chaillu's background, which he purposefully kept hidden from the public. He never spoke about his ancestry or his origin, and this became a point of speculation, rumor, and a lot of sort of nasty things going on behind the scenes to kind of bring down his reputation.
Part of what happened also is that partly because he was a showman and as a result of what you've been talking about, so much of his story became part of the popular culture at the time. It got incorporated into cartoons and songs and even plays.
Yeah, it really in 1861, it really kind of hit this kind of cultural phenomenon peak. There were musicals that were staged in London with gorillas as the centerpiece of the shows. There were plays. There was even a dance craze, believe it or not, that popped up called the Gorilla Quadrille. Popular songs were written about the gorilla. And so Du Chaillu had sparked just this kind of incredible pop culture phenomenon. And this, you know, that's one of the things that really helped take this evolution debate that was percolating in the background and pushed it kind of out of academia and out of the scientific world and into the masses, like onto the street level in pubs and in church pulpits. That public kind of phenomenon of kind of a pop culture just craze. Today we might say it went viral. That's what the gorilla did in 1861, and that really kind of pushed it out of, you know, just this scientific curiosity into a real pop culture phenomenon.
Talk about the ways in which his discovery, this pop culture phenomenon, all that came out of his adventure, how that intertwined with the evolution debate at the time.
Well, his timing was pretty spectacular. When he emerged from Africa with these specimens, it was the exact same moment that Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species. This was the end of 1859. So you have this incredible moment when science is really turning its attention to this subject, that this new, you know, ape kind of makes its international debut, so to speak. So the timing there was unbelievably coincidental. And at this time, people were, you know, starting to debate the issue of evolution by natural selection. And one of the main opponents to the theory was a guy named Richard Owen, who was kind of the dean of the scientific establishment in London. He was the head of the natural history collection of the British Museum and just an extremely important figure in Victorian science. And he had written articles kind of against Darwinian theory. And the basis of his argument was that it wasn't that he didn't believe in evolution per se. He just believed that humans had developed on a different, totally different evolutionary track than, for example, apes, and that there was a divine sort of plan behind the human development. And so he was looking for ways to bolster his argument, and he latched on to the gorilla as kind of a way to put Darwinian theory to the test. And his way of doing that was to compare the brains of the gorilla and humans. And in doing this, he really invited Du Chaillu and his specimens to come to London. And Owen was kind of his backer, his patron. He was the one who opened the doors for Du Chaillu to go to the Royal Geographical Society and display his specimens. And he really kind of helped him get access to the highest levels of English society. So there was, Du Chaillu had no real way of knowing this at the time, but he was stumbling right into the center of this new debate. And his gorillas really became the face of it, the public face of it. Because Darwin's book, On the Origin of Species, he never in the book really talks about human evolution. It's the theory in general. And he doesn't mention in the book the possibility of men and apes being related in some way, but it's implied in the book. But when Du Chaillu's gorillas sort of took center stage in London, it instantly became kind of the face of this and the illustration that people use to grasp onto the ideas.
Even beyond the debate about the science of it, the religious debate became part of it as well, and he stumbled into that as well.
Yeah, he did. The biggest, the most kind of famous preacher with the broadest range in London at that time was a guy named Charles Haddon Spurgeon. And in early 1861, right when Du Chaillu came to London. Again, this is just one of those coincidental moments of timing. Spurgeon opened the Metropolitan Tabernacle, which was a huge church in London. It held about 5,000 people. And Spurgeon was kind of the first real superstar evangelist at this time in London, and he read Du Chaillu's book about his adventures and invited Du Chaillu to come to the church with his gorilla specimens. And Spurgeon delivered a lecture on the gorilla and basically kind of used this symbol and charged it religiously. So it was he began to kind of to lecture and to preach against evolution, using Du Chaillu's specimens as his props and the subjects of his sermons. And Du Chaillu kind of stumbled into that as well. He didn't appear to be comfortable taking part in that, but there he was, right there at the altar with Spurgeon and the gorilla.
And if that wasn't far enough, it even had its influence on the propaganda leading up to the Civil War. And this relates to what you were discussing before in terms of what Du Chaillu's ancestry was.
Yeah, this is in the U.S., of course, this also coincided with the beginnings of the Civil War. And the slavery debate, of course, was boiling over. Du Chaillu's book, despite all those distractions, became a bestseller anyway in the States. And the gorilla was just kind of co-opted into this. It became a slur. Even Abraham Lincoln, pro-slavery advocates, started calling him a gorilla. And a lot of those pro-slavery voices even tried to use evolution theory to try to bolster their cause. And so they tried to suggest that there was some sort of hierarchy of development among human racial categories. It's total junk science, of course, but they would try to argue that the difference between blacks and whites from an evolutionary perspective was enough to warrant differences in the treatment of slaves, for example, and in laws. Again, there's, you know, obviously this is pseudoscience, but this kind of pseudoscience was quite common in the early days of the evolution debate. The tragic sort of irony of all this is Du Chaillu looking at these arguments, looking at his specimens being used and twisted as sort of fuel for those arguments, because at the same time he was, you know, he was, while his specimens were sparking some of the hatred, these kind of hatreds, he was also a victim of those, because people began to talk that he might possibly be of mixed race ancestry. He hid that fact. In, for example, the Royal Geographical Society, there were no minorities at this time, so he was going in there as a white man. But in fact, the evidence does suggest strongly that he was of a mixed race ancestry, and that he had hid it his whole life, and that he was actually born not in Paris, not in New Orleans, but on an island called Réunion, which is off of the east coast of Africa, in near Madagascar. And it's an island that for a long time, and at that time, had a really vibrant kind of mixed race culture. It was known as a melting pot. And that's where Du Chaillu grew up. His father had been a French trader. But the records indicate that his mother was classified in census records as a quote-unquote free colored there.
And in the midst of this whole debate, Du Chaillu decides to go back to Africa. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, after he kind of is elevated to this instant fame as this explorer, those attacks start coming against him. And they come from a couple of different directions. You mentioned the scientists that sort of attacked his evidence. There were also these rumors about his ancestry. And there were people who had written, for example, another trader from Gabon was writing to the English press suggesting that Du Chaillu wasn't who he said he was, that his ancestry was clouded, and suggested that possibly he hadn't even gone on these trips into the interior of Gabon, that he just kind of stayed on the coast, invented his travels and adventures, and collected these gorilla skins from traders who brought them to him. So he began to be doubted from a couple of different directions, and his credibility was just ravaged. So he essentially, first he challenged his critics, and he said, if you don't believe me, come back with me. Come with me into the jungle. We'll go and I'll show you where I went. I'll show you what I saw. Nobody took him up on that. But he didn't really have a choice at this point. He felt that he had to sort of defend his honor, so he launched a second expedition back into the forest to try to prove himself and to restore his credibility.
Monty Real, the book is Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debate, and the African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. Monty, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you.